And Tibby Schwab.
Tess Schwab, Dr. Sean Springer, the
relationship
between Klal Yisrael and vegetation.
Well, good morning to you all. Very nice of you, and it's a great cover to be invited. It's a greater cover to be invited for a second time. Have a second bite of the apple or the cherry. What I'm going to try and put over today is the relationship between Klal Yisrael and plants, vegetation, and of course there's a connection with what's coming up next Shabbos, which is Tu B'Shvat, which obviously has a connection with plants, and in particular fruit. Now, I'm going to start with a quotation from the Sedra, Bereishis. And right at the beginning of Bereishis, when the Torah is describing the commands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to the earth, V'yom Elokim tadshe ha'oretz deshe, that the ground should produce deshe, vegetation, grasses, esev mazriya zera, eitz peri oise peri leminai. Now let's translate this literally, because this is important. Eitz peri means a tree which is fruity, a fruity tree. And here we're talking about not the fruit on the tree, but the tree itself. Eitz peri, oise peri. And it also makes fruit. So it's, we're told by Chazal, Rashi tells us, Eitz peri oise peri is shehei tam o eitz katam ha-peri, that the actual taste of the wood of the tree should taste like the fruit itself. In fact, the ground did not behave itself properly when it was bringing forth this tree, this Eitz peri oise peri. Because it says in the next pasuk, esev, so it did all that as far as the general vegetation is concerned, and it brought out an eitz, a tree which makes fruit. But we are missing one word peri there. It was commanded to make eitz peri, oise peri, and what did it do? What it actually landed up doing was to make a tree with a bark and wood, which doesn't taste like anything, making fruit. So it didn't behave itself properly. Well, that's Rashi and the Meforshim. And the kasha is that the ground does not have bechira. You know, how does it making choices? How is it that we're talking about something that made its own decision and rebelled against the Kodesh Baruch Hu? In fact, it received a punishment. So later on, the Rabbeinu Shlomo hung the klala of Adam onto Adama as well, and visited the land, the ground, with a klala, by giving Adam Arishon the klala that he gave, and put it together with the klala that he gave to the ground. Now, Rabbi Dessler asks this question about land, earth, not having bechira. I mean, nothing has bechira except mankind. And he gives a very sort of enigmatic answer, which is interesting, that we're talking here about the production of peris from the ground. The ground is given a command, produce eitz peri, oise peri, and it doesn't do as it's told. And yet, the ground does not have any bechira. Rabbi Dessler says the following, that in the elements, in the fundamentals of the universe, is the material from which man is going to be made. Later on, man will be made from bringing together earth and the gibel, and the Rabbeinu Shalom will mix it together and make a sort of figure of a man, then blow into it the Nishmas Chayim, and from that man will be produced. So man is going to be produced essentially from earth, from the ground. And therefore, the elements, the atoms, if you like, the molecules which make up man, must already carry the idea of Bechira within them. So although it's true that the earth doesn't have Bechira in the same way that we understand, we can make moral choices, but because man is going to be made out of this material, the seeds, so to speak, of Bechira are already there. And that's how he answers this concept and contradiction of the earth not having Bechira. So we start off very, very early on with this connection between the earth, what it does, it creates, the tree that it creates. And the Om emphasis, twice in this pasuk, don't know whether you noticed as I read it, twice. Okay. Yeah? Better?
Just this form again.
I understand. That twice in this pasuk, these psukim that I've read, the word leminoi occurs. According to its kind, according to its species. And in the second pasuk as well, in your base, so this word leminehu and leminoi is very, very important, because really and truly that is what the Torah is all about. Later on we're going to have prohibitions like klayim, putting things together that shouldn't be put together. And there's a very wonderful chinuch, sefer chinuch, on the whole concept of these things that the Torah prohibits to put together. And these prohibitions have something very, very deep in nature. And he explains, and he goes first, when he's explaining Bas V'Cholov, for example, that you mustn't put together, he says that, well, I don't really know the reason for Bas V'Cholov, but I think that if we have a look at other Isurim, which involve putting things together, then maybe we can get some idea of how Bas V'Cholov works. So he has a look at Kishuf, yeah, witchcraft. Witchcraft is forbidden because, he says, there are certain elements that the Ribbono Shel Olam knows that if you put them together in spells, etc., and for the wrong reasons, that it's going to produce a damaging effect. It's going to produce something which is a mashchis, something that destroys. And therefore, if it's not done for good purposes, like, for example, medicines, where it's allowed, says the Chinuch, when it's done for other purposes, it's damaging. And so he takes a leaf out of that and says all the combinations that the Torah talks about, whether it's Bas V'Cholov, whether it's Klayim, whether it's growing grapes together with another Zera, whether it's Shoya V'Chamoya, whether it's Shatness, whether it's all of those examples, the idea is that the Ribbono Shel Olam knows how he made his world, and the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want certain combinations to take place because the result is damage. The result is hashchosa. So leminehu is a very important concept, that things should keep it according to their species. There is a certain order to the world, and that order should be maintained. Once we destroy the order, once we disturb the order, then we are interfering with the fundamentals of nature. And so leminehu is a very, very important concept. Let's move on to another quote. And we'll see the relationship between man and vegetable again, or man and the way the world works. Beis Posuk Hay says, that's the first pasuk. And the second pasuk goes on in that chapter to talk about the following. The cholsia chasode, and all the plants of the field, terim yer baoretz, before, prior to when they were in the land, that means they were not visible. Cholesev asode terim yitzmoch, and all the grasses of the land before they actually grow. And we're talking about a period where just prior to them coming up out of the ground. They're just below the ground. So the pasuk tells us that the reason why they hadn't grown is because kiloi himti Hashem lekim al haoretz, because there had been no rain. So until this point, nothing had grown because there was no rain. And then the pasuk goes on to say, v'odom ayin la'avoid es adoma, and there was no man to till the land, to make something work, to actually make it happen. So we've got three things here. We've got, firstly, the description of the plants which hadn't yet grown. Then we got the cause of why the plants hadn't grown, because it hadn't rained yet. And then we got a third phrase which talks about mankind, man, yeah, with a big M, was not around because there was no one around to lavo de sodomo. And Rashi says, pshat, in this whole pasuk. Rashi says, kolesev asode adayin loy tzomach, it had not yet grown. Yeah, ubegimel, that means on yoim gimel, shekosev atoitze oretz, previous in chapter 1, where the Pasuk talks about the Toseros, which we read before in another connection. When it's talking about that, Shekosav Toitzi Oretz Lo Yotzu, actually, although the Pasuk says Toitzi Oretz that the land brought forth, it didn't bring forth. It brought it forth up to the level, Ela'al Pesach Karaka, whatever the Pesach Karaka is, just below the surface. So the plants were growing, but they didn't break the surface. So they were there, sort of potentially underground. And why not? We had to wait till Elo al Pesach Taka, Omdu ad Yom Shishi, and they waited there until the sixth day, even though it says that Vatoitze Oritz on the third day, they didn't come up out of the ground until the sixth day, Fables. Why not? The Posset answers itself, says Rashi. Ki lo himtir, because it hadn't rained, and the plants can only emerge from the ground if it rains. Umar tam lo himtir. So Rashi asks, well, why didn't it rain? Why didn't it rain? I mean, it should have, yeah, grown the plants on the third day, and it rained, the whole thing should have started up. Why do you have to wait till the sixth? Lefi she'odam ayin, and the last part of the posuk is the teretz to the first part of the posuk. That's why this posuk contains three phrases, three different parts to it. That the plants hadn't grown, it hadn't rained, and there was no one around. These three things are all connected, says Rashi. Because lefi she'odam ayin lavodes adomo, because there was no one around to work the land, ve'imake betoivoson shel geshomim. So there's no one to appreciate. Isn't it a wonderful thing that it rains, and when it rains, the ground comes up. Yeah, the plants come up. There was no one to appreciate, because there was no one to appreciate it, so the plants didn't come. The Rebbeinu didn't allow the plants to come up until mankind came along on the sixth day, where you now have consciousness, you now have appreciation, you now have gratitude, and all the other midas that Adam brings with it, him. When Adam comes on the scene and then understands why these things are necessary, why the Rebbeinu Shalom is doing all these things, his spalel aleihem, he davened for them. So in other words, what you see here is quite an amazing thing. I don't know whether any of you are aware of quantum theory, but we have a very, very similar thing in physics, where the consciousness of mankind and the way behavior of atoms are interrelated. I won't sort of pursue the point. There are very, very nice articles that have put it together, that the consciousness has an effect on the world. But Rashi says, in this connection, here it is, that mankind is not something that lives on Earth, you know, completely independently of Earth. Earth is there, and the plants grow, and the rain falls, etc. That's one thing. I'm Molites, as they say in Yiddish. And then mankind lives on the Earth somehow. No, not at all, says Rashi. That's not how it works. The earth works because there are men on the world, because there are people on the world, and it is the consciousness of man and the appreciation, the gratitude, the tefillah of man that makes the whole caboodle work, makes the whole show, in, puts it into operation. And so that means, I needn't say any more, the title of the shiur was The Interrelationship Between Vegetation and Mankind. Well, here it is, couldn't be more foolish than that. Not just incidental, the man digs and plants grow, but it's the actual consciousness of man, the appreciation, the understanding, so that he'll govern. When he governs, then something will happen and the plants will grow. So Rashi is a really very, very fundamental concept in the way we should see the world working, that mankind and the whole of the world, and of course it extended to everything else as well, not just plants, the whole world works because the Rashi wants it to work in order that it should serve man. And man should look after it in such a way that it does so. I'm tempted to just mention the quote of Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Avigdor Miller has these lovely sort of quips. And someone once walked out of his house. It's pouring with rain. And he's grumbling about the rain. And he met Rabbi Avigdor Miller. And he was grumbling, oh, look, the rain, etc. And Avigdor Miller says to him, tell me, do you like peaches? You know, out of the blue, do you like peaches? And the man sort of puzzled, as a matter of fact, I do very much. He says, what do you think a peach is? Peach is rain. That's what it is. You're grumbling about the rain. That's the most wonderful thing, that the rain comes down and is mahana mankind. So sometimes, you know, we don't understand this intimate relationship. Creation, man, vegetation, all hangs together in a very, very spiritual way. Now, let's move on to look at what the Torah tells us about the first situation of man. And the Torah tells us, find the correct reference. Sorry. ויקח השם אלוקים את האדם ויניחהו בגן עדן לעבדה ולשמרה. And the Ribbono Shel Olam took Adam, the man, ויניחהו בגן עדן, and he placed him in Gan Eden לעבדה ולשמרה. And the Mefarshim say it wasn't just a gardener, it wasn't just a hired hand, this Adam. The Avda L'Shomra means that he should promote Torah and Mitzvahs. Avda is the first reference to Avoida, Shomra, the Avoida Hashem, Shmira of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. That was the meaning of it. And then the Pasuk goes on to tell us the following. Vayetzav Hashem Elokim ala Adam Leimai. And the Rosh Hashem commanded Adam, saying, Mikoy Leitzagon Ochoel Toichel. You may eat of all the fruits of the gone of the garden. We're interested in the first of those psukim, which is you'd be surprised to hear, and Gemara tells us this, and Rav Hirsch expands on it, that this is the pasuk from which emerge the seven Noahide laws. Yeah, the Zion Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, they come out of this Pasuk. Let me explain. The Pasuk, the Gemara Darshans, the following. Vayetzav, obviously that means command. And the Torah is now telling us that there is such a concept as command, Vayetzav. And the Torah is telling us that man's moral calling, if you like, the beacon of what he's meant to stand for. And he's meant to be there for all generations to stand for a being that can be commanded, that will obey commands. Now, you know, it's not really a reasonable prohibition. The mitzvah sichlius, the mitzvahs that we understand, some of them are not reasonable in the sense that we would not work them out ourselves. But in fact, we're talking about the prohibition here against Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. And when we have a look at this Eitz Hadas, and you think about the taste of this fruit, which must have been absolutely wonderful, because the Torah tells us how wonderful the fruits were. V'yatzmach Hashem Elokim min Adama, kol Eitz Nechmod L'Maret. They were beautiful to behold. They were absolutely wonderful to look at. Tov L'Machal. They were absolutely delicious. The Torah never talks about things in diminutive terms. The Torah says they were delicious to eat. That means they were the most delicious things you can imagine that are possible. And that's the description of the general fruit in this garden. And then he talks about something which is obviously the pinnacle of creation here. And the center of the garden, the Eitz Hadas, must have been something out of this world, something quite extraordinary. And so therefore, if you went by your own senses, the sense of taste, sense of sight, your imagination of how this fruit must have been if you could eat it, then your intellect would vote and would say to you, this is wonderful, this is fantastic, this must be. My ears tell me, my eyes tell me, my nose tells me, my taste buds tell me, everything, all my senses tell me that this is good. I'm reminded, because we're in to Parshas Bishalach almost, of a vote by Rabbi Matis Yobus Salomon. Yeah, just as a digression, because it's a very similar thing to what we are talking about. B'Shalach starts off with words, Vahi B'Shalach Paro Yasa'om, V'Lo Yinocham Elokim Derech Eretz Pelishtim Ki Korafu. And then the Rabbi Shalom says, you know, they'll see a war and go back to Mitzrayim. Now, it's a very interesting few psukim, because the Rabbi Shalom is giving his reasons. Why I'm not going to take them through the shortcut, and why I'm going to take them the long route round, is because they will see the wars of the Pelishtim, or get involved in wars of Pelishtim, and they'll hightail it back to Mitzrayim. So the Baruch Shem very rarely tells us his reasons. The Baruch Shem says, do this, do that, but he doesn't divulge what's, so to speak, at the back of his mind. What's going on? Says Rabbi Tzion, a beautiful thought. He says, you know, you're talking about a people that's just come out of Mitzrayim. They've had a very hard time there. I needn't enumerate. We all know about the Sedus, that the Jews were in Mitzrayim, and they saw in Mitzrayim the persecutions they had to undergo. Now they come out. They come out of Mitzrayim at last. And therefore you might imagine they could put forward the following argument. We've had a very hard time, and our fathers and our grandfathers, and we've, you know, gone through this persecution. So now the Ribbono Shel Olam, let us go to Eretz Yisrael, as you promised, and let's take the most direct route. After all, that must be the best way. Must be the best way. Because here we are, you know, so to speak, they say in America, give us a break. We've had hard times. You can lead us sort of around in a circle. So one might argue that they've been through so much. Surely now is the time to give them something, a reward, a quick way, a quick route to Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us that sometimes, you know, things look so obvious to us. This is the route we should take. You know, it's good, it's easier, it's more convenient, it's more comfortable. Taking all of those things together, because of all those things, therefore, it is best. It is the better one. Says the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but the fact is, I know more. If I take you through the easier route, you'll see the Pelishtim and their habits and their wars, etc., and you'll get involved. And the result will be disaster, because you've got to go back to Mitzrayim. That's what the Pasuk says. Veshobu Mitzrayim, you'll go back to Mitzrayim. I see more. I can see round the corner. You can't see round the corner. And sometimes I might do something which is completely counterintuitive, which is against the Seichel. And yet, the Rabbi Shalom assures us that the last lesson you have to learn when emerging from Mitzrayim, you've learned lots of lessons there, in Munah, etc., etc., but you've also got to learn the lesson for life, which is that sometimes things go wrong, even when you think it's time I had a break. Rabbi Shalom, give me a break. The Rabbeinu Shalom sees a little bit more than we do, and even though we still encounter hard times, the Rabbeinu Shalom will be doing it for us in order to favour us, in order to make sure that the end result is as he wants, that we do arrive in Eretz Yisrael. What we've got here is a very similar situation, coming back to our subject, which is that Adam Rishon, looking at this tree, you know, could easily work out that this is the most marvellous thing. You know, everything tells me, all my senses are screaming that this is very good. And yet the Rabbeinu Shalom says, Meitzadas, Tovero, Loi Circle, Mimenu. Let me give you a sort of marshal of, say, yeah, someone's sister is getting married. Yeah, a girl and her sister is getting married. Sister is getting married and she desperately needs a dress. Yeah, she wants to go to her sister's chasna with a nice dress. And she's looking around, can't find anything yet to suit her. Eventually, coming nearer and nearer to the chasna, and she finds this dress in the shop. Looks at the window, and this is it. This is what she's been looking for. It's the right style, it's the right everything, right price. Everything right about this dress. Walks into the shop, feels the cloth, also feels exactly right. Turns over the label and sees this dress, the material of this dress, is made out of a mixture of wool and linen. All of a sudden, all that was good 5 minutes ago, the right price, the right sneers, the right everything, everything all of a sudden stops. There's a little voice that says, everything your senses might tell you, that this is all good, but the label says it's shatness and therefore it's asur. That's what this is about. Adam Arishan's senses are telling him, this tree is good, everything about me is taking all my senses, all my intellect is telling me it's good, but the Rabbeinu Shalom says it's not good. And that is the picture of a yid. That is what a yid is all about. You know, we get messages from everywhere, whether it's magazines or adverts, or yeah, there are messages crowding us all the time, telling you this is good and that is good and that's the best and this is the way to live, etc. And all the gurus of the world are telling us all sorts of different messages, and the Torah's got another message. The Torah's got a different message, sometimes counterintuitive, sometimes what seems to be coming out of the outside seems very sensible, and yet the Torah is telling us that this is the way to live, and that is what Yid stands for. All the world says one thing, and the Torah says another. And of course, later on, we have Avraham Avinu doing just that. So, this is the Eitz Hadas, and the Moshel of the Eitz Hadas. And in fact, of course, the Eitz Hadas is very interesting, but because not only does it tell us something that the Rabbeinu Shalom told Adam Arishan, which was that this Eitz Hadas might seem good for you, but isn't. I'm telling you not to eat it. For Chava, it was in the greater Chiddush, because Chava already got the message from Adam Rishon. Therefore, this was the first case of Tosha Balpeh. Right? Tosha Balpeh, this set the scene for later on that Klal Yisrael would have to live by not messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, because that would only happen once. But in fact, Tosha Balpeh was through the words of the Chachamim and through the Drush of the Torah, that the Chachamim would tell us how to live. This was already established right at the beginning of the universe, right at the beginning of mankind. Tosha Balpeh. And it's a chayk. It's going to be a chayk, a statute, a chayk, an understandable mitzvah of macholos asurois, and mitzvahs lois asay. And of course, you know, even though macholos asurois we don't understand at all, I don't know why, you know, a piece of chazah is awesome. I don't know why bosa b'cholov is awesome. It may be counterintuitive, counterintellectual, counter-sensual, all of the things telling me I don't understand it at all, and nevertheless, this is what a yid stands for, that the Eitz Hadas was representative of this, so the concept of Toiv and Roh was defined in the Torah, not by us, never by our own instincts. The Torah always gave us the formula of what is good and bad. And that's our guide. That's our compass. The Torah is always our compass, that it tells us what is good and bad, never mankind. And this is not to deny that evil things don't have attractions. Of course, evil can be very, very attractive. Certainly. And that's all contained in this very first command, that mankind makes its choice about whether it's going to be good or bad. And the laws are received by tradition, what we call Torah Sheval Peh, and that is indeed what we have with the seven Noahide laws which I mentioned before. And they come out of this pasuk by itself, that there should be dinim, there should be justice in the world. And not only, you know, a duty to carry out the things oneself, but also to ensure generally, l'doiros, that dinim and commandments are carried on through the generations. And that comes out of, why am I emphasizing this in this year? Because that comes out of the story about the trees. So the trees and the plants and the vegetation give us a lot of the information about mankind and how mankind is meant to live. And not just Jews, but in fact the whole of mankind. And certainly, Yidden as well, we also have the seven Noahide laws and lots and lots more, of course. And it all comes out of the story of the trees, and then the Torah is put it, couched in terms of vegetation and the way the agriculture, etc., and the agriculture work. In this pasuk, and the Gemara deduces that these are the seven Noahide laws. I'll just run through them very quickly out of interest. So that's number one, by itself, that there should be dinim in the world, that not only for oneself, but l'doiros. And then later on, we have the word Hashem, and the Gemara deduces that this is a command against Birchas Hashem. Birchas Hashem means cursing, Chas V'Shalom, cursing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, keeping the name holy. Keep Hashem as Hashem. This should be kept holy so that mankind continues and has an enduring and an ongoing relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then the word Elohim, which always stands for justice, and Elohim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his in his cloak of justice. And this is a warning against Avodah Zarah, that he is the God who will mete out justice for doing the wrong thing. So this is Azhorah against Avodah Zarah. Even though, and of course, Elohim stands for power. Yeah, the whole of Bereshis uses the term Elohim until only later on is the word Hashem used, because that's the name of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which represents power and justice. But power, there are lots of things that seem to have power. Yeah, you can look around the world and lots of things which seem to have power. So the Torah is saying there is only one power. There's only one Elohim, only one source of power, and that therefore is a Hashora against Avodah Zarah. The Torah goes on to say Allah Odom, which is the next words in the Pasuk. And that's Hashora about Shvichas Domim. And Rav Hirsch says something quite wonderful. How do we get Shvichas Domim out of the words Al Hodom? Al Odom means about oneself. That man has limits placed on him. In other words, there are limits placed on myself. Now, if there are limits placed on myself, then kal v'chaymer, there are limits placed on me vis-a-vis somebody else. So if there are limits placed on myself, I'm not in charge of my own body. I can't do what I like. I certainly can't do what I like with somebody else. So therefore, you get shvichas domim out of that. You can't kill somebody else. You're not allowed to injure yourself. You're not allowed to do what you like yourself. So how much more so is it an ashora that somebody else also is involved? Lemai. Lemai is a very interesting word. Next word. Lemai is on Gilui Arayos. How does Lemai work on Gilui Arayos? Lemai means that one person is telling another. A person is telling his son or his daughter. He's transmitting something. Lemai, that's what Lemai is about. It's communication. And the prime communication is from parent to child. So therefore, you can only communicate from parent to child if you know your child is your child. if you know that you have generations, and you know this person is the child of that, that person is the child of that person, and you can only communicate through the generations if they are genuine generations. Otherwise, you don't know who you're communicating to. And the only way you can ensure that you have generations that are pure and identifiable, if you are Nizah and Gilu Ha'olam. If there's no morality, then you don't know who's who. You don't know, it's a complete chaos. You're not transmitting at all to anyone who you need to transmit to. So the word Lemaya tells us that as horror for Gilu Ha'olam. Only possible if generations are kept pristine, family life is maintained. Of course, the Eden excelled themselves in Mitzrayim, and this is an amazing thing that Rashi points out. There was only one case in Mitzrayim, 210 years. They were under the dominion, under the heel of Egypt. And the Egyptians would say later on, you think your families are pure? Yeah, if we could do what we like, we'd send you here, send you there, make you do this work, that work. Do you not think that we could have done something with your wives? How do you know your children are your children at all? You know, maybe they are Egyptian children. The Torah is made, Hor Ruveni, Hor Shemaini. It puts a hey at the beginning and a yud at the end as an evidence that Yud Kei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gives evidence himself that the Israelites really are the Israelites. And that means one of the things which was Roshinu es Shemom. They didn't change their names. Meaning what? They didn't change their names. They didn't call their children, I don't know, Akhenaten or whatever the Egyptians... Is that what it means? It means much more than that. There's a beautiful Meshech Chochma which explains this. That what it means is that when a person called his son Reuven, he understood and it was clear that he was the grandson of Reuven. Reuven of the Shevet Reuven that came down to Egypt. And every single one of the people of the 600,000 Eden that emerged from Mitzrayim were Meuchas to their grandparents. We knew exactly that the Egyptians then. There was only one case, Shlomis Bas Divri. And the Torah points out the fact is that she had a relationship with an Egyptian, and then later on what emerged was a child who was the rebellious child, the story in Bamidbar. That was the only case. You know, 600,000 people, 1.2 million adults, yeah, were there in Mitzrayim, and not one of them stepped out of line through the whole of the 210 years. L'mishpechosom, l'beis avosom, the Torah says. And this comes from Lema, that we have a transmission process that ensures that generations are kept. So once again, why I'm saying this is because it comes out of this same pasuk, which talks about the trees. And then finally, the Torah says, not finally, penultimately, finally, Mikoletz Hagon. Yeah, the Torah says, Mikoletz Hagon, Ochel Toichel, Mikoletz Hagon. That from all the trees of this Gon, where you are Odom, it's all yours now, everything's yours, because there's nobody else here. So the Torah deduces, the Gemara deduces, V'loim min Gezel, that when it's yours, that's when you can eat. When it's not yours, you can't. So Gezel is one of the seven Noahide laws. And finally, Ochel Toichel. Ochel Toichel tells us, V'loin Eivim Menachai, only that which is legitimate food. So what is legitimate food? That is meat which has been separated from the animal. But while the animal still has life in it, Eivim Menachai, that's not legitimate food. So Ochel Toichel tells us that which is legitimate food, which doesn't have any soul in it anymore. In other words, it is dead. While it's something which still has a soul in it, it's alive, that's not legitimate food. So we get the seven Noahide laws from here, most interestingly. So here we have, if you like, from this pasuk, not only a philosophy of both all of mankind to the seven Zion Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but something else. And Rashi regularly referred to this, that I'm just going to say, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu curses Adam HaRishon because of the avery that he did, again, the earth is involved. The land is going to get cursed on your behalf. So the land is involved. Coming back to what Rabbi Dessler said, because the land was, the earth is that which makes up man ultimately, and therefore it is all involved, you know, integral to man itself. Aru Adoma, and then again we get with Cain as well. This is Adam HaRishon, and in terms of plant life, you know, needn't have involved the plants at all. Rabbi Yisrael might have removed an arm, yeah, or a leg or something, and in a different way Adam could have been punished. And nevertheless, what the Rabbi Yisrael does, he connects the klala to the earth with the klala of Adam HaRishon, because the two are so bound up together. Cain as well. Cain killed Hevel, as we know. And again, we have the curse of Cain. Because the earth helped you to conceal your crime, Cain. From now on, when you plant, and of course Cain was an ish adamo, he was an agricultural man. Nowadays, from now on, that the earth will not give up its strength to you. It's going to be very, very hard. It's going to be hard work all the way. It's not going to help you anymore. Nor of an of orits, in fact, you're not even going to be in one place. But basically, the klala was that tilling the land, plowing the land, growing things can be very, very hard work. So once again, the earth is involved in the klala of man. So you've got this deep connection. Later on, when we come to the base of Migdosh, the Mishkan, as we know, was made of wood. A central part where a Jew could find spirituality. The centerpiece, or one of the centerpieces of the Mishkan, was the Menorah. The Menorah is very, very beautiful in the description the Torah gives it, and we've got these knobs, we've got these flowers, but Rav Hirsch explains with Rias that we don't have time to go into now, and it's not necessary, but he works out that the Menorah really is an image of a tree. Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim bo. The whole Torah is described as a tree. So the Torah is relating our spirituality, our connection with the Torah, and the tree, yeah, which is represented by the Menorah, which is a tree in all but, you know, all but name. It is really representative of this Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim bo. We want to grab on to the Torah. It's considered a tree. I want to say just a few words. I know running out of time about Tu B'Shvat, and of course Tu B'Shvat is actually a celebration of the Peiros Eretz Yisrael. It's about the land of Eretz Yisrael, and which in turn is a celebration of Emunah, because there is something very, very special about Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah describes it in very graphic terms in Devarim. The Torah says that Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael are very, very different. You are now passing out of Mitzrayim, coming out of Mitzrayim, and you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. Okay, change of location. Much more than that, says the Torah. Says the Torah, Shemata Mitzkola Mitzvah, Asher Anoich Mitzavcha Yom, the man Techazu, Bosim, Virishim, Mitzvah Oretz, Asher Etim, Oimrim, Shomar, Rishto. And then there's a description which follows. Ki Oretz Asher Atavo, Shomar, Rishto. Because the land that you are coming in to inherit, like Eretz Mitzrayim, he, it's not like Mitzrayim at all. Asher Tzos Mishom, that you just came out of. Asher Tizra Zarecha Veshkisa Baraglok of Gan Yorim. Anyone knows anything about the agriculture of Mitzrayim knows that the Nile overflows its banks once a year and irrigates all the fields. They have these canals and they bring the water further. But basically, in Mitzrayim, which is a fairly flat land, if you want to irrigate the fields, you've got to schlep the water. They have these machines. I remember learning at school, in primary school, called the shaduf. They were catapults. You used to put the water in this spoon-shaped vessel, and the catapult would shoot the water out. So they had these very early machines in those days. But it was all a matter of mankind schlepping the water with buckets, shadufs, or whatever, canals there to dig it. But Eretz Yisrael, completely different. Oretz Asher'atim, Oibim Shomar L'Rishto, but the land that you are going to inherit, Eretz Horim V'Kois. It's got mountains and valleys. You can't schlep the water there. Schlep the water up the mountain is a very, very impossible job. Limtash, mind, tish, mind. You are going to be